What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Green Mulligan Lane Patreon, where we get to analyze and discuss characters that don't often get the love they deserve. This is Problematic Characters Month on the Patreon channel, and we are concluding our conversations this month with the character. It's kind of an amazing character, but boy are there some rough stories along the way. This is the character Roger Bochs, B-O-C-H-S. This is a character who is an amputee, who is a part of Alpha Flight, and he's the original designer of the Bochs suit, which is kind of the Canadian Iron Man, if you will. I am thrilled to be joined. Daryl and I have hung out so much lately, and we get to hang out again next week at FlameCon, but Daryl Lawrence is back with me, and one of my dearest friends. I'm so delighted every time we get to hang out. The incredible Gabriella Garbaro are here. Let me welcome you both. If you want to tell everybody, as you introduce yourselves with your name and pronouns, what are some of your preliminary thoughts on Roger Bochs? Or I would almost even love to know where your journey with this character began. Let me welcome Gabriella back to the show. Hi, Gabriella. Great to see you.
Hello. Good to see you too. And I'm so glad to be here. My pronouns are she, her. And I was so, like, weirdly interested in this character because I know this is, like, a very small part of him, but he has the body of, like, a lot of people I know. And I just appreciate the representation of having, like, a purportedly kind of chubby disabled person because I feel represented by that. And I appreciate that. And it was definitely interesting to read. It was, like, kind of ugly in a lot of spots because of a lot of what he says about, like, oh, no one could ever love me because of my body or whatever. And that was, like, kind of a bummer to read, but I do think it was, like, important for people to know that that's a thought that goes through people's heads sometimes.
And was this a character you were familiar with before delving in for the research?
No, I legitimately had no idea who it was.
Oh, this is a brand new journey for you, then. I'm excited to take this journey with you. Now, Gabriella, yeah. For those of you that have listened to the show long term, I initially found Gabriella when we wanted to have some conversations very early on Grey Malkin Lane about wheelchair users, and we had some conversations about Professor X way back at the beginning. Gabrielle is a very talented, brilliant writer, and we've become close friends ever since. I'm so happy to have you back on every time for any episode, but this is one where we definitely would love the requisite voices, so I always appreciate your willingness to represent. You may also recognize Gabriella from her recent appearance on the John Oliver show. We had to talk about that on the show a while back. Let me welcome Daryl Lawrence back as well. Hi, Daryl.
Hello. I am Daryl Lawrence, he, him. I'm here for the Alpha Flight expertise. Am I an expert? I don't know. Maybe.
That makes you a definite expert.
So the way I feel about Roger Bochs is that he's sort of tragic in how he ultimately ends up. And we're going to get into that because, as everyone listening knows, we're going to take a full journey with this character. I think that it's interesting to see how he was written and breaking it down to his eventual writing out of the series. So I think there are some reasons there. We can get into it if the conversation goes there. I'm really happy to hear Gabriella's perspective as well, because I think it's so important that there are people who are represented and you can see yourself in comics. That's sort of why we gravitate to this medium, because there are so many characters across all of the different companies and everything. It's nice to see that John Byrne got his portrayal correct when he created this character in some regards. I mean, no writer is perfect, but it sounds like Gabriella has a lot to add to my understanding of this character, and I'm really excited for this conversation.
So lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. Obviously, I use he, him pronouns. Now, I love Alpha Flight. Now, when we use the phrase problematic character, I want to be very clear. This is a character that has a tremendous amount of potential. What makes this character problematic is two things. Number one, this character is not written by someone who has the life experience of a character like this, or that person was was likely not consulted either. So we see this character dealing with a lot of self-hatred in a way that feels kind of inauthentic, almost as though losing your legs or ending up in a wheelchair are like the worst thing that could ever happen to somebody. Second, we see other characters being actively bullies to this character, using a lot of really hateful, ableist terms to kind of shame and degrade not only this character for being the term we see often here is like crippled, although disabled is probably a more appropriate term. We see words like wheelchair bound, which are not great. You're not bound to anything, you're a wheelchair user. And then we see this character shamed for being chubby or overweight quite frequently as well. So we're gonna talk about some of those problems along the way. Now, there's an interesting thing. I'm gonna open here with just a little bit of a quick history of ableism in some comics. This is a much larger conversation. We see some characters who start out as disabled or as wheelchair users, such as Professor X, and we see other characters who are amputees. And a lot of their journey ends up becoming about how can I repair myself, quote unquote? How can I learn how to walk or give myself a new body or the ability to be mobile? A lot of times these characters have superpowers that allow them to be mobile. Professor X is a little unique in that he can project his mind out of his body, but we see a ton of characters who are wheelchair users or disabled or amputees who then end up with the ability to move, and that's directly related to their power set. So one of the most famous examples in the X-Men is Takeshi Matsuya or WizKid, who has the power to create machines around him. We see a lot of characters who are amputees who end up becoming able to move or walk through cybernetics. Donald Pierce is an example of that. We also see characters who become wheelchair users because of something bad that happens to them in comics. This is really infamously explored with Barbara Gordon over at DC Comics. At Marvel specifically, we have characters like Kurt Connors, the Lizard, or the lesser known Milady Kusuma, who is Komodo, who have like lizard powers to regenerate limbs. We've got Flash Thompson, who becomes an amputee, who ends up getting the Venom suit to be able to move around. Or in more recent comics, and I just talked to Kieran Gillen about this character, Arno Stark is a character like this, who kind of stuck in an iron lung and able to project his mind into Iron Man suits. So there's interesting representation here. Oh, another major one in the X-Men, of course, is Forge, who is an amputee who builds cybernetic limbs for himself. As we approach these characters, there's a lot of lesser-known ones as well, but it's interesting to watch these themes because in more modern comics, we see characters who love themselves. Karma is a more recent example. She's lost her leg and has embraced her disability and loves herself for it. But we often see characters that get stuck in this place of self-hatred or wanting to escape. So that's kind of a big place to open this list before we jump into Alpha Flight. But Gabriella, as we take kind of an overview of the way these characters are portrayed in fiction or comics, are there standouts? Are there people who get it right? Or am I capturing these themes correctly, I suppose? Is it easier way to ask that question?
Yeah, I think it's like a problem, maybe not a problem, I should say, an issue, with a lot of, minority statuses where like the writers are not a member of that community, and so they write things definitely from their perspective. I'm thinking in particular of like, racial issues being viewed from a very white lens. I think it's always going to have that until more disabled writers are able to, make it into writers' rooms or be hired as consultants. I think more than having the perfect representation, it's really important to just have a lot of different representation. Because, like we were saying with Roger, like I kind of like that he was like, "Yeah, people call me chubby. It's fine." Like he doesn't say it's fine, but in my head, I'm like, you know what? You have like. He is actually really like buff and he has like a very strong upper body. And like most of the people I know without legs, they have a similar physicality. And I think that's really cool. But I could also see it being really problematic where like you look at it and you go, wow, why did they make him visibly so much different than the other members of Alpha Flight? Why does he not have like the typical superhero build? Why does he only talk about his disability? Right? So there's always going to be be issues that other people find, but I think because we're not a monolith, it's really important to have, just a big breadth of like the type of people that they represent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. As a social worker, cultural competency and like working with people from different populations is something I constantly have to challenge myself with professionally as I get to know new people. And it's important to recognize two things that I want to toss out very quickly, just kind of to challenge our brains. Number one, when we look as an American society or wherever we're at, there's a term called ethnocentrism. The way that we learn to see the world becomes the preferential way to see it, right? So we create this idea of what is normal, and then we measure everything next to that. We create an idea of what is desirable or attractive, and then we measure everything next to that as well. A second thing that's interesting is disability is not a fair at all in America. There are a lot of other countries where disability is very widely embraced and supported, and it's just a thing that exists. It's a part of someone's character or daily life. Where here, people are tokenized and pitied, and you're so brave for, there's all these kinds of things. One of my when I was a college teacher, I had some students who were wheelchair users, and it really allowed me to learn a lot about the biases that I carried as a person. But I also grew up with a mom who she was a teacher, but when I was a little kid, she worked in a place where there were lots of people with disabilities, and we would go just kind of hang out at her workplace, and I got to know a lot of different individuals through that. So it's always been a part of my lexicon, but I didn't know how to challenge my biases until I learned a lot about what ableism is and how that represents. Now, Alpha Flight more specifically, there's a lot of body horror in Alpha Flight. Even the character Sasquatch, right? He turns into this big giant monster. But Roger Box is an example of like, here's this person who we look upon with pity or with body horror ideals based on the fact that he has no legs, based on the fact that he is chubby. Like people will look on him with that kind of pity a lot. And his story really gets intertwined with a character named Lionel Jeffries or Scramble, whose literal power is body horror. I touch you and I create fleshy, crazy monsters and like twist things. So there's a lot of interesting things, and we'll kind of get into it as we go, but there's a lot of components that make this an interesting discussion. And Roger is ultimately a very, very competent, talented character, but you almost see him get lost in a world where he's comparing himself against the quote unquote norms or more attractive teammates. Again, quote unquote, more attractive teammates that are around him. And I do think that that's something that most of the people that are disabled that I know deal with on a daily basis. Not only the expectations of others, but they've also been taught growing up what is desirable, what is normal. And they have a journey on an emotional and spiritual level of learning how to kind of measure themselves up in that world. I have a dear friend, for those of you that may follow this person online, he's quite prominent. Here locally, I have a friend named Carson Tuller, who is quadriplegic. He is a very tall gay man who injured himself and ended up as a wheelchair user. And he's been very public about his journey over the last several years, to the point where he's even been consulted by like presidential campaigns and things. You can follow him online. He is always sharing like very, very vulnerable parts of his story very consistently. He's an incredible person, really, just the loveliest human. And I love hearing people share their authentic stories. There is an entire world of millions and millions of disabled people, and to share your voice in the way that Carson does or the way that Gabriella does, to share the authenticity of your experience, it's not anyone's job to educate anyone else. But I think for those of us that didn't know we had bias, it's always a beautiful thing to be challenged and educated along the way. So before we jump to Alpha Flight, and we'll get silly today too, I promise. Gabriella, do you want to add any additional commentary there?
No, I'm just really excited to get into this because, like I said, we're not a monolith, and so I have a genetic disability that put me in a wheelchair, and so I've never been able to walk. I've always used a wheelchair, so I do have thoughts about his wheelchair that I'm excited to talk about. And I did the same thing with Professor X. I way overanalyzed the kind of wheelchair he had and why.
That's one of my favorite moments on the show early on. You're like, is his wheelchair from 1890?
Yeah, like why was his wheelchair made of wood? There was no metal. It wasn't like the 1800s. Anyway, but the other person I was on with said that he probably found it in the basement of the X Mansion, which I actually now is my headcanon that he just had found it.
I think my headcanon is still remains that in some capacity he uses it for sympathy. But Xavier
Yeah,
also
with the
was not.
blanket and everything.
Xavier also was injured and had to learn her and kind of the psychological journey of him of his own. Anyway, it's always a journey for characters. So as people are listening, I encourage you to challenge yourselves. I encourage you to educate yourselves, be willing to accept and challenge your biases and listen to the right voices along the way. But we're going to jump into the corrupt world of Department H for a few minutes. Department H is hilariously just a crazy institution. This is the place that like experimented on Wolverine. They have decided to authorize a team full of superheroes, and they're very representative of different kinds of people, but they're also very exploitative. They want to bring people in who are very mentally ill, who are very morally challenged, who have a lot of deep psychological issues, and then they make them national heroes while like manipulating them very constantly. It's a very long journey for our Alpha Flight characters. Daryl, do you want to talk about the launch of Alpha Flight number one for listeners who may not be familiar with the history of John Burns, Canada?
Back in, oh, let me think, X-Men 120 and 121, you get the premiere of Alpha Flight, and that's John Byrne collaborating with Chris Claremont. And they come back in issues 139 and 140, and at that point, they were so popular that editorial went to John Byrne, and they're like, "We want an Alpha Flight book." And he's like, "Oh, a miniseries?" And they're like, No, you misunderstand. We want an ongoing." So he did it sort of out of obligation because he co-created the characters. They were mostly entirely his brainchild. I'm sure Claremont had a little to do that Byrne would not give him credit for it these days, at the very least. So Alpha Flight launched. John Byrne had plans initially for about a dozen issues, and then ideas just kept coming. He eventually did 28 issues for volume one. So that's sort of where we're set up. I know that we're going to cover Beta Flight because that's where Roger comes from, and we see other members of Beta Flight sort of in shadow. Even Byrne admits, "I had no idea who these people were, but I needed more characters, so I invented shit for them." Roger was someone that he probably didn't initially plan on writing a whole bunch about, but Roger becomes a crucial member of Alpha Flight because of what he did in those first 12 issues. Sort of the mechanism he became as a storytelling device in the elimination of Mac.
So we have a bunch of characters introduced at the end of Alpha Flight number one, not on the premiere team, but they're just kind of shown in the background, all of them worthy of longer conversations. There's Flashback, Diamond Lil, Wildchild, Madison Jeffries, who I've been cosplaying as for the last couple of years, Smart Aleck, and the last one is Roger Box. This is the team training under Gary Cody and James Hudson in case Alpha Flight ever needs a replacement team. So it's fun to have an Alpha Flight, and then there's a Beta Flight and a Gamma Flight, and eventually in a Mega Flight very quickly and early on. Daryl, do you want to tell everybody who Jerry Jackson is? I think, well, Gary Cody and Jerry Jackson are characters we've got to introduce quickly before we get to Roger.
Jerry Jackson is an executive with Roxxon, and we know that Roxxon is evil. So he was working with Mac. Mac works for Roxxon. No, he worked for the Canadian military industrial complex back in the day where Jerry Jackson used to be. They used to be co-workers. Mac found out that the Canadian military wanted to sell the technology to the American military for this battle suit he had built. Mac really didn't like that. He took the helmet because he developed the helmet before working for Department H. He got out of there, and this sort of ruined Jerry Jackson. Jerry's wife and kids left him. He tried to hang himself. Then he became disabled as a result because I think the housekeeper came in and got him down just in time. We have another wheelchair-bound character, except
Careful
this.
not to say wheelchair bound, say wheelchair
I'm
using.
sorry. Thank you very much. He uses a wheelchair. Really blames Mac for everything bad happening. So he gets a job with Roxxon. Then he it sort of enacts a plan, and he's trying to figure out how to get his revenge. That's where we also get Delphine Courtney, an androgynous android who can be whoever they want to be.
I love Delphine Courtney, actually. I think she's really fun. So as we jump to issue 11, this is where we first meet Roger. And we're going to be reading a little bit of dialogue in this section. We are going to keep the words as they were presented represented, but some of these words are not great in 2025. We'll just note that as we go through this. Roger Box is a redheaded man. He's a very talented roboticist, engineer, and a mechanic, and he lives in a small apartment. Okay, this is a real story. I'm going to pause this very quickly. I love Canada. I love traveling to Canada. Several years ago, I was hanging out with my friend Tyler, and I'm like, I had this weird dream last night. And he's like, what was your dream? And I'm like, I don't know. I woke up and was on vacation in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And I think I just love the name Saskatoon. And he's like, well, fucking let's go to Saskatoon. So literally, we booked plane tickets to Saskatoon the same day. Well, like, we booked them that day. And then a few months later, I took a vacation to Saskatchewan. And we spent a few days in Saskatoon. And then we randomly drove to a little town called Moose Jaw. And Tyler and I do not mean this to be derogatory toward Canadians. I love it. But we were cracking up at the name Moose Jaw for a town. And we would affect this accent. And I'd be like, do you want to get some lunch? And he'd be like, I don't know. I'm all out of moose bucks. And I'm like, I got some extra moose bucks. Let's go get some lunch over here. So I've been to Moose Jaw. It's a really cool place. We ended up going on a weird tour of an Al Capone like liquor factory where people were dressed crazy. I love it there. Anyway, that's where Roger lives. He lives in Moose Jaw. So for those of you that have been there, it's a really cute town. It's a random story for all of you. So he's living in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, and he's being visited by Delphine Courtney, who's working for Jerome or Jerry Jackson, recruiting operatives for Department H. So Delphine is in a slim green. We'll skip over that. Roger is wearing green on brown. His apartment is only one room, and it is littered with scrap metal everywhere, tiny components. He is automatically unlike any other character we've ever seen in a comic because he has no legs, and he's in a fully equipped wheelchair. Let's pause here. I want to talk two things really quickly, and I'm going to have Gabriella take this. Number one, it's crazy to me that this man is brilliant, roboticist, engineer, mechanic. But when people look at him, the first thing they think is amputee or disabled. People become defined by their disability in a frustrating way. Second, I want to hear your thoughts on the wheelchair. So let me have Gabriella talk about this initial image of Roger.
Yeah, so a few things. He is in what looks like a three-wheeled wheelchair. So it looks like there are two wheels in the front and one in the back, like a tricycle kind of. I don't understand how that stays upright because if you push him sideways, it would fall sideways. I don't get it, but I
Maybe
am
the
a big.
wheels rotate.
I mean, I trust in his ability to make robots and to engineer a solution to that problem. I just find it a really strange choice. Like, why? I have six wheels on my wheelchair. They went from four to six. They literally have six now because it was too easy to topple over.
Sure.
Because everybody I know with it, this is just a side note, everybody I know with a disability has a story about elementary school, how they tried to run over a soccer ball and their wheelchair either successfully flipped or almost flipped over. So, like, wheelchairs are hard to stay upright, and I don't understand how this does it. I don't get it. I love the wheels, though. They're like really, I'm not an engineer, so I don't know the right way to say this, but like, they're very rounded, and I've seen that on beach chairs, like wheelchairs that go on the beach. And I in my head, I'm thinking, you know what? He does have scrap metal everywhere. I hope that those wheels make him let go over stuff easier. Because so much shit, sorry, gets stuck under my wheels. If there is anything on the floor, it gets stuck and I can't go over it. It sucks. And I hope he did better than me.
I do you want to talk about that kind of tokenization of you become known for one thing and not for your education, your accomplishments, or do you feel like that was enough of a statement about that?
I see that with him. I, at the risk of being overly critical, and I might say this later based on like other stuff he says, but I do think he kind of, he doesn't allow that to be the first thing, but almost every piece of dialogue in the issues I read were him talking about it. And I'm like, why don't man, like, talk about something else? Like, make a cool robot thing in your house. Do something cool. And can I say something about his house too?
Yeah.
Okay, page one of issue 11, it says setup, and you see him like ushering Delphine out. Outside, you see his house, and there is nothing but steps. Nothing but steps. Steps up for what reason? I don't know. Steps down for what reason? I don't know either. But there are steps everywhere, and I don't understand it. He should have a lift. Of all people, he should have something cool like that, but he doesn't.
Maybe he has a hover chair.
You know what? Maybe he does. Maybe he does. But I want the representation of having a cool as fuck like techie thing that would let him like hover around or something. I don't know. I'm a little bit bitter about that. I do like that he has a pen holder.
Moose Jaw in his house with all the stairs. Yes.
Yeah, his house is on the stairs. He does have a pen holder in front of his armrest, which I find amazing and I would love on my wheelchair and I don't have that. And then on the side of it, he has like what is it called on a bed? Like a bed skirt. He has like a bed skirt on the side of it, which I find really strange. But it's cute.
There's some interesting choices by John Byrne here for sure.
Yeah.
So he has.
It definitely wasn't put there to cover up, the battery that's shaped really weird and would have to be, drawn 10 million times. Definitely wasn't there to cover that up.
Yeah, he's living his best little life here. He's like self-employed and he's contracting with the government. So he walks Delphine out again. Delphine is the kind of androgynous android, and he contemplates to himself, what a strange woman, so beautiful and yet so cold. And what she's proposing. She broached the whole matter with such confidence, as if she had no doubt that I'd accept. So Delphine wants Roger to be part of the team Omega Flight, and she wants to take down Alpha Flight. Jerry Jackson has a whole plot line. It's a whole thing. We're not gonna delve too deep into that story today. But Roger is loyal to James Hudson, who he has been working with for some time. And he decides to infiltrate the group Omega Flight in order to spy on them to see what they're doing. He thinks bureaucrats. It's a wonder anything gets done at all in this country. He pulls back a curtain and we get our first view of the box armor. It's huge, silver metal masks, silver muscular arms and legs, black bodice in metal with a huge golden belt around the waist. And this is giving, Iron Man, Ironheart, every character that's designed armor in their house. It's kind of interesting. So he gathers at the World Trade Center with Smart Aleck, Diamond Lil, and Flashback, who calls Roger Wheels, and Wildchild's there. And soon they meet Jerry Jackson. And he was, again, we kind of talked about his origin already, but he wants revenge on James Hudson, basically. So Jerome ends up getting, he got fired, his wife and kids left. He had a suicide attempt that left him paralyzed, and he's also a wheelchair user as a result of his own hubris, but he blames Mac Hudson for all of that. So all of this is showing up, and they're setting a trap to bring Guardian in. Gabriella, did you have thoughts on Jerome's wheelchair or his origin story? It's his suicide attempt that resulted in his disability.
Yeah, I think disability representation, the criticism of it is usually that there is always like a tragic story for like why you became disabled. And I do sort of like that, at least in the issues I read, they don't really talk about what happened to Roger. Like he is just in a wheelchair, he's amputee. Get over it. If you wonder about it, like get past it because there's a whole story to pay attention to. I am disappointed that Jerry is not in that same, I guess, like they don't represent it that way because I do get sort of sick of the whole like, in the worst moment of my life, I was made to be disabled. And then every moment since then has reminded me of the worst moment of my life. Just because, and like, I know that that does happen for some people, and I think it's important that they're represented, but it's like the only thing that's ever talked about. And I'm disappointed. But
Jerry Jackson was a bad dude before he became disabled. And frankly,
love
Mac.
that. Love that. Love having a disabled villain.
Yeah,
Love that.
and Mac Hudson is kind of a villain too, if I'm honest. He's not the greatest human as like the industrialist weaponizing for the government. Okay, we jump to issue 12.
Oh, can I say one thing about issue 11? I wanted to also say that Roger did the time-honored disabled tradition of immediately shoehorning in a complaint about the government for no reason right after he was like, well, I'm gonna call somebody. The government can't get anything done. Because I can't tell you how many times I've said the exact same shit for no reason. It's a non sequitur, but it matters.
Well, it's funny too because Hudson also works for the government, right? Like
Yeah.
he's already working with them. Initially, Roger is piloting the box armor from his chair. It's like a remote control device, like a tech interface. So Omega Flight is fighting Mac Hudson or Guardian. There's a box gets to, lift Sasquatch in the air and throw him. Box is a wild name for this character, by the way. It's like a full Iron Man suit, but his name's just Box, BOX. But you want to think it's like Roger like stylized this after his own last name. Like it's like an imprinting or their branding thing, which is kind of fun.
It
So
took me such a long time to understand the pun, because if you can't see it out there, his name is Bochs, and I was like, Box. So, and then I understood it, and I was like, oh, I am the butt of the joke. I understand now.
he's
So just want to
branding.
say that. Yeah, he's Brandon.
So there's a moment where Box gets to just kind of wail on Guardy, and he rips his helmet off, he punches him. "You helped with the development of Box," he said. "You made him powerful enough to beat even you, powerful enough to short out your force field, powerful enough to take your cyber helmet." And Daryl, will you read Mac here? Mac says,
"The others, I can understand how they turned against us, but not you. I recruited you myself. Your psych profile was perfect. Intelligent, patriotic, loyal."
"Fool, you still haven't guessed, have you? You haven't realized who it is that's killing you. Of course Roger Box would not turn on you or Alpha Flight, but I am not Roger Box. I am Jackson." So back inside, Delphine has been revealed to be a full robot. Jackson is piloting Box from his own wheelchair, and Roger has been tied up and left sitting against a wall. Jackson cries out, his mind overloaded, and Roger says, I told him James Hudson helped me perfect Box, helped me turn him from a toy into a superhero. I knew if anyone on Earth could beat Box, it would be Guardian." And then Mac Hudson's suit blows up and he's dead for a super long time. We're gonna kind of wrap up there. Do you want to talk about this turn for Alpha Flight, Daryl? This was a big moment in the comics. Like, the main hero is dead.
Yeah, it's really stunning. And the fact that John Byrne planned for someone on the team to die, he didn't know at first, but then he started writing the first few issues and he is like, oh, well, Mac Hudson's gonna die. And he set up really in the first issue for Heather Hudson to be the true leader of the team. And Chad, I know you're the number one Heather Hudson fan on the face of the earth. And
I am not.
it. This is something that pissed a lot of people off. It still pisses people off. As I'm talking and promoting my book, a lot of people just read the first 12 issues, and the fact that the team leader is killed off at the end of issue 12 really puts them off of the rest of the title. And maybe they stuck around for a few more Burn issues, but by and large, especially people who read it as it was coming out, this is something that Marvel was not doing. And dead characters were not coming back in 1983 like they are now. So when you had someone like this dead, they're going to stay dead and they're going to show up in a Marvel handbook, Book of the Dead, somewhere along the lines in the 1980s. And that's the only information you're going to get about them. It's something that people would write in about for dozens of issues. And even when he's really brought back, because there's a fake out under Burn where you think Mac is back, he's not. He doesn't really come back until Fabian Nicieza resuscitates him. And that's an issue like 87-ish.
And it's a
So,
weird fucking story with aliens. Don't worry about it right now, but it's nuts.
and it's the same weird story about aliens that's used for the fake out in the upper 20s. So it's odd how Fabian legitimized that comeback, and we won't get into it because it's weird, but this was a big landmark moment, I feel, in Marvel Comics in the 80s.
So what we know about Roger at this point, he's self-employed. He's been contracted and recruited and contracted by Mac Hudson to build the Box armor. So he had originally designed it. Now they want him to turn it into a weapon. He's built this kind of interface that you can use to power the device up and control it from remotely, if you will. So he was part of Beta Flight. We see him in the background. Jerry Jackson wants revenge. He recruits Roger, who is infiltrating to see what happens, but Roger ends up tied up. The Box armor gets used in the attack against Guardian, James's or Mac's identity or superhero identity, and Mac blows up at the end. So Roger's creation ended up being part of the story that resulted in the death of James. Gabriella, did you have any comments on 12 before we jump ahead?
Yeah, I really love body horror. I really enjoyed the body horror in this, and I do think that when you are reading things like this, I am interested in like the fact that there was two disabled people. There were two disabled people, and it's also a body horror issue where like you have Delphine's like skin being ripped off, and then at the end you have like a big explosion of like a human being that's horrifying. And I'm interested in that. I think there's probably a connection there because I have a lot of thoughts that are very scattered about disability's relevance to body horror, and maybe the fact that disabled characters are used so that you think about the integrity of the body, and then the integrity of the body gets kind of violated when disabilities happen in a way, if you think about it a certain way. And I'm just really interested in that. So I always try to keep an eye out for that kind of correlation, and I find that really interesting.
And with every one of these characters, we all have our own relationship to our bodies and our own emotional relationship to them as well. Okay, so in issue 16 of Alpha Flight, we see Roger back home in Moose Jaw. He's drawing on his drafting table, and a new acquaintance, Madison Jeffries, shows up. Daryl, will you read Madison? I'll read Roger in this interchange. Mr. Jeffries, welcome to Moose Jaw. I'm glad you could come.
Hey, anytime anybody sends me a plane ticket and $1,000, I'll go anywhere. You botches?
That's box, you know, as if it were spelled BOX. Come in and sit down.
Sure, you're calling the shots, pal. Although this dump don't look like much, like you could afford to have sent me all that dough.
Oh, I have a great deal of money, Mr. Jeffries. I simply choose to spend out on other things than accommodations.
Your choice, I guess. Okay, Box, what's the scam?
The scam is very simple, Mr. Jeffries. 6 weeks ago in New York, Guardian was killed. You are going to help me avenge his murder. So Roger shares about what happens, about Omega Flight. He shows him the box armor, and he wants help making it so that no one but Roger can ever control the box armor again. And he knows that Madison Jeffries is a mutant who can reshape metal, which is a very impressive skill set. He says, with your skill and my knowledge, we can recreate Box bigger, stronger, and more powerful than ever before. And once we've done that, we will track down Jerry Jackson and Delphine Courtney. The rest of Alpha Flight doesn't know how know they escaped, but I know, and I'm going to destroy them. So Roger is moving from the guy behind the screen, and he's getting more active. In issue 22, we see the Box armor get upgraded. Roger learns how to phase into the suit and phase back out. So there's a new interface that Madison has helped establish. I can touch it, and literally, it's not like his body is inside the armor. It's like his body becomes part of the armor, which is the thing Madison can use. I don't know quite how this works for other characters. It's like a little magic tech thing that they created. But if you have to be careful because you can get permanently phased if you're not careful. Quote, being permanently part of Box would be exchanging one kind of wheelchair for another, he notes after phasing in. A slight tingle in the extremities, not even as uncomfortable as the phantom senses I sometimes get, like when my foot itches. And remember, he has no legs. Roger is thrilled about the upgrades, and soon they load up the van, and we see the decal on the side that says R Box Electronics. So he does have his own company. Gabriella, thoughts on the neural, well, the phasing into the box armor itself?
I'm gonna reserve my time talking about that until later.
Yeah, that sounds just fine.
But
what if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
I do think that it's interesting that he gets phantom senses because he was born without legs. Am I wrong?
We'll get there in a moment, but that is an interesting dialogue piece. Absolutely.
Yeah, because like he wouldn't know what it feels like for his foot to itch.
If he
Not to be like
Yeah, no, I think
overly
that's a fair
like,
criticism, but
but I.
I do think that's something amputees do experience. So
Yeah.
I keep calling him an amputee. He's not an amputee at all, is he?
I think it's still called an amputee, but it's different when you're born without limbs because you don't have like the neural pathways that got cut. You just don't have those neural pathways. So
So
you wouldn't have like phantom stuff, as far as I know.
Yeah, so thus far, this character's portrayal has been pretty great, in my opinion. We're gonna
Yeah.
start getting into where it gets to be a problem. So he gets compelled by Talisman in 24 to join the Alpha Flight battle against the Great Beasts, and Walter Lenkowski or Sasquatch ends up dying, but his soul is out there. And this is a long body horror journey for this character. But Roger's like, yeah, why don't we just put his soul inside the box armor? So now Roger is a tech support guy on the team, and Lenkowski is operating Box, but Roger officially joins the team as of issue number 25. For heaven's sakes, Mr. Lenkowski, be careful. There's been no opportunity to give the new Box a proper shakedown. You could damage him severely that way. So now his prized possession is being piloted manipulated by a very erratic scientist, and he meets Aurora, Jean-Marie Bubier, who is a multiple personality or dissociative identity disorder character who has a very wholesome kind of nun side and a very horny French woman side. Think of like Blanche from the Golden Girls for this character. And Aurora is so horny for Walter, but now he is no longer available. And Roger Box is right there. And Aurora flirts with everyone to get whatever she wants, this part of her at least, the more sexual side of her. In 2728, we see Box scanning the dimensional crossroads because he's trying to find a body for Walter to go into, and it ends up pulling the Hulk into a fight. In 29, Hulk punches right through the Box armor's chest, and this time it's Roger inside. You've smashed your fist through my chest. No, through the robot's chest. I've got to remember, I'm just mentally and molecularly merged with the Box robot. Not really a part of it. I can't be harmed when Box is damaged, can I? Can I? And he has a panic attack and he can't phase free until Madison Jeffries helps him. Madison says,
Good thing you're editing this. Some of his critical circuitry was crushed, and those prime parts that escaped being smashed were scattered all over the place. It's a wonder he didn't shut down from symbiotic shock, but somehow he kept going. Tough little guy.
Oh, don't say little guy. And then here's the problems beginning. Roger says, as he phases out of the armor, out, alive, as whole as a legless cripple can ever be. Oh, sorry for the terms, friends. I felt like my body became my coffin. Meaning the Box armor. You saved my sanity, Mr. Jeffries, and quite possibly my life.
If you'd stayed inside Box longer, the symbiosis might have become irreversible. And then there ain't nobody who could have put you back together.
What if Box is so badly damaged as to be rendered inert? Or if the robot's parts are scattered to the winds? If I phased out, if I could phase out, I might find myself more of a cripple than I am now. Okay, so then again, he turns to Heather. It was your husband, Guardian, who made a pitiful paraplegic feel like he had something to offer when he asked me to join Beta Flight. So he phases back into the Box armor and attacks. Having already given two good limbs to the cause, what's a third? Maybe he did lose his legs. I don't know what this means. Besides, even one leg gives me more mobility than I'd have in my wheelchair, so all of his dialogue is suddenly about him being disabled. So here's hopping at you, Hulk, because the Box armor has one leg at this point. Hulk rips the metal legs off of Box, who quotes the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz, a piece of me here, a piece of me there, well, that's me all over, which is the Scarecrow when his limbs get ripped apart. And the Hulk is defeated, and there's property damage everywhere, and in 30, Heather Hudson becomes the new leader of Alpha Flight. And as she thinks about her team, Gabriella, do you want to give us Heather's inner monologue here?
Yeah, it's so my super team consists of two depressed tins with their powerless, an absentee goddess, a pain-racked dwarf, me with no powers, and a legless cripple who can't stay too long inside his robot armor without becoming part of it.
So Box immediately balks at having to play by all the government rules. Heather's furious when she finds Madison and Roger working on the Guardian armor. They fight Scramble, more about that guy in a minute. They fight Deadly Earnest. Then Heather starts wearing the Guardian suit and calling herself Vindicator. So she's now in action as an untrained superhero and the leader of the team. This suit was built from the remains of Dark Guardian slash Delphine Courtney, and Heather immediately disables the safety protocols put in place. Puck, who's part of the team, calls Box and himself both cripples. Puck is a little person. Well, Puck is a tall man who becomes a little person after a mystic thing happens. Anyway, Box wonders why he ever wants to leave the Box armor when he's merged with it. Like, why would I ever want to get out of here? They fight the Black Razor, who's a like genie character from like Middle Eastern myth. Box ends up getting reduced in size by a mystic blade. At 36, Roger and Madison work together to build a sonogram machine to help with Snowbird's pregnancy. They end up fighting Pestilence. So we're gonna pause here for a minute. We're kind of throwing Roger Box into the world of superheroics. There is a lot of intensity. There's a lot happening. You don't know psychologically how you're gonna react to being like a member of a superhero military, but there's a lot of like problematic terms that start getting tossed around. The pitiful paraplegic, the legless cripple, from both him and others' dialogue on multiple occasions as he's in the middle of all the crazy. It's fun superhero stuff, but this character is basically written as like a disability that talks in some ways. Like his identity becomes gone here at this point. We're gonna get into the like it gets crazy in just a minute. But Gabriella, let me hear your thoughts on his superhero journey inside the Box suit.
So I want to tell a story about myself, because I'm self-centered, but when I was, so I've used used a wheelchair since I was two, and my mom, she still tells a story of when I was like five, we were getting on a plane. My mom had me look out the window of the plane because we could see them loading up my wheelchair. She had me look at it, and when I saw them loading my wheelchair up into the plane, I started crying because I didn't want them to hurt it. So I do understand on some level there is like a weird connection for some people with their, like, I say weird with like lovingly, but there's like an unusual, I guess, connection that you sometimes have with your mobility equipment.
Well,
So
because
like,
it's your ability to interface with the world. That's an interesting
yeah.
thing on this already, because the box armor as his wheelchair in that capacity, or as his mobility unit.
Yeah, and I think that's cool. I think that they could do a lot more of that kind of thing instead of him calling himself slurs, but we don't live in that world yet, I guess. You know, obviously, I don't love the whole, like, you know, calling himself names and talking about how he's a little guy, and it's all just old. Like, it's stuff that we've heard for generations. A lot of us heard it on the playground, and it's just like, ugh, okay, we understand. You're sad that you're disabled. Still, we get it. Let's talk about anything else. You have like so much other shit going on. Please talk about something else. Talk about anything else. And I'm disappointed that he's like, oh, I don't really have anything to offer the group. And like, oh, without the box armor, like, I don't have anything. But he made a sonogram machine. That's cool. Like, there are so many other things that you can do, but like, then I think of like superheroes in general. Some of the criticisms of them is like they're very like physical, like supremacy based, and so I do see that as like part of the problem. Like, yeah, I would probably feel really bad about my body if I was around like superheroes all the time.
Yeah,
Because
in inner dialogue, we all have moments of self-hatred with ourselves. We are all rough on our bodies sometimes. It's interesting for me to look at this from the lens of how other characters treat Roger. Madison never really comments on Roger's disability at all. Like, we're brothers, we work together, we're friends. Heather thinks of everyone in the most derogatory terms. And then we have Aurora. We're gonna jump to Alpha Flight Annual number one. Gabriella, do you want to read Aurora with the French accent, or should I make Daryl do it?
Oh, I love the French accent. I was reading it when I was reading it to myself.
Aurora is again, she's Aurora is an amazing character when written correctly. Go see Leah Williams, for example. Aurora is a trauma survivor, a significant trauma survivor, and this dissociative identity that's created has been kind of there to protect her. She was very sexually traumatized, and she's kind of created this version of her identity. She's a very sexual person, but kind of a manipulator, and like is kind of always focused on pleasure. She doesn't treat Roger kindly, but she's also a victim of some things. So she's also written with like her words are ridiculous. Like the French accent, the way it's written out, is crazy. So we'll have Gabriella read Aurora here. Aurora is flirting with Roger and trying to get some machines designed for her. And he thinks, I guess it's my genius that fascinates Aurora then, because she can't possibly see much else in a wheelchair-bound paraplegic. Again, terminology. So she's so physical. How long can intellect alone continue to excite her? So later he's swimming laps. Like he's quite strong. And most people, well, most people, I know many people who are wheelchair users that really love to swim. It's a great way to get around and exercise. And Aurora is lounging in a bikini and flirting. She says,
You swim well, Roger.
I love you so much.
This is how it sounded in my head when I was reading it. It's awesome.
He says, having no lower body, I developed a lot of upper body strength.
North Star has no right to deride you as overweight.
He thinks of me as a legless fatty, eh? Oh my God. Your twin brother doesn't like me.
North Star doesn't like any man that I like.
Maybe he's jealous.
We, maybe.
And you do like me, don't you, Aurora?
Of course I do, Roger.
Okay, we'll talk about this in a minute. And then there's a big battle with Diablo and Gilded Lily, who Daryl is cosplaying as right now, everyone. Just kidding. There's a crossover with the Avengers. Box calls himself, quote, a pudgy, excuse me, I have acid reflux. Box calls himself a pudgy paraplegic as he gets ready to battle as Box. And then they go undersea to fight with Atuma. Okay, let's pause for a moment. People with disabilities have their own body reactivity to the world. They have their own sleep habits, their own mental wellness. this, just like any other person. It's a silly thing to even have to say it that way. But every person who has a disability is also a sexual person in their own way. They may be gay or straight or trans. They may be very hypersexual or not. They masturbate and have sexual pleasure and orgasm, and it may be different than what you would experience. There are a lot of people who have lost feeling below the waist who still experience sexual pleasure and are capable of not only reproduction, of course, but sexual pleasure consistently. We don't know exactly what Roger's connection with this is, but when we've learned to see ourselves as normal or not normal based on what society tells us, there are interesting things that happen when people who have disabilities are dating people who do not have disabilities. So this like very gorgeous, flirty woman in a bikini is suddenly flirting with Roger, who's thinking, "Oh, I'm a genius and I have upper body strength and she likes me," even as he's thinking of himself in these derogatory terms. So there's some parts of this relationship that I really like. It's really interesting in that way. Gabriella, any comments on that before we jump? We're going to get into the story where it gets nuts.
The only thought I have is whether having this conversation, I wanted to like smack him because he's like, hey, she likes me, which like I feel like that's him feeling himself like, hey, I'm pretty buff. Like she likes me, you know?
And
And then
she's
he,
openly flirting with him, so of course, right?
And then he's like, oh yeah, Nordstrom calls me a legless fatty, huh? Like, don't say that, bro. Just, ugh. And it made me mad because I was like, you don't have to like take that in to yourself. But I also don't like that. He was like, yeah, I'm buff. And she's like, yeah, nobody should call you fat, which is also pretty rude. And I don't like that. But
Aurora's also really homophobic to North Star, who isn't quite able to come out in this era, but that's a whole nother
oh.
conversation as well.
That's awesome. No, I'm just kidding. But I feel very much like I relate to this part. Like I don't know. It's not like a huge, I don't have like a profound comment. I liked their interaction. I felt like there was a lot of authenticity to it.
All right, Daryl, Bill Mantlo's in charge. There's a lot happening in the book. There's a lot of crazy storylines. I love that Roger gets this big story. It's great to see a character represented like as a major in a major story in this way. But this is where things go fucking crazy. Daryl, do you want to take us from Alpha Flight 40 forward?
I will do what I can. So, after the battle with Atuma and Atlantis, Roger surfaced too quickly. He gets the bends. So, the first thing we need to solve is how to make sure that he doesn't have the bends anymore. Madison Jeffries sort of makes a hyperbaric chamber off of the box armor. Roger phases out. It's not good enough, so he then collapses. They have to get him back in. Thankfully, they pick a purple girl along the way so she can make him get back into the armor because he's incapable of doing that because he is so racked with pain
So
because of the bends.
let's pause here for just a second. It's implied but not directly shown that Aurora and Roger have developed a sexual relationship at this point. You don't know if she's kind of just using him, but you get the idea that they're doing some stuff because when he gets back in the armor, or when, excuse me, when he's kind of trapped in this place, she can't touch him anymore, and she doesn't react well to it at all. We get moments like where she's thinking like, "I cannot love a machine." It's interesting too, and he's desperate to touch her. He really is like pressuring Madison to get him out of this. Like, we need to cuddle again. I want to be able to touch her again. I want to give her goosebumps again. So they've had a physical relationship, and I want to attribute part of his desperation here to that he's like had this new relationship that he's really excited by, and it's all been fucked up because of this undersea adventure a little bit.
So then they're going on a mission. They're on their way to the New Life Clinic, where Madison's brother, Lionel, better known as Scramble right now, is going to help out. And it's really odd because they have Roger in one water tank and then they toss him into a second water tank to contain him, even though he's over the bends by this. It's odd. He's angry. He is lashing out. He damages the ship. They finally get him to the New Life Clinic, and then Scramble makes him some legs. I almost said eggs because Scramble scramble and eggs. Scramble makes him some legs. Then Aurora is like, oh wow, because by that time they had
Scramble
left.
characters or listeners, if you think of Mask from the Morlocks, Mask can like touch you and reshape your flesh. So there's stories where he makes people ugly and then stories where he makes them pretty. And remember how he gave Jean Grey tentacles that one time? This is kind of what Scramble can do. Scramble makes like he uses like extra flesh to make Roger legs, but he also like builds Roger up into like a sexy buff body. He like reformats his flesh so Roger becomes suddenly this like 6 foot, like redheaded Adonis kind of looking guy, and he's very excited about it. But Roger was also driven a little bit crazy by the depressurization. He's been like lashing out with like fury and anger, and you're kind of led to believe that he went a little bit mad or nuts because of the undersea like depressurization thing. Daryl, am I characterizing that correctly, do you think?
You are, but more is revealed later. So let's go back to the point where he comes back with Scramble and Mannequin, future Mannequin, Whitman Knapp, to Alpha Flight headquarters. He has these legs. Immediately, he throws Aurora over his shoulders and they go upstairs to fuck.
He goes, look, it's the new improved Roger Box with all my baby fat having gone to build a new set of legs. That's a weird line. Aurora's like, you're beautiful. And he goes, that's what Scramble's mirrors, that's what Scramble's mirrors say to me too, Aurora. But hearing it from you, more than makes it, excuse me, more than makes my day. It makes up for my whole rotten life. That's what he throws her over his shoulder, takes her up the stairs to, yeah, they're fucking for sure here.
Yeah, they are. So, in the meantime, there is an interim where Sasquatch comes back, but as Wanda Lankowski, because at first it's just this big white Sasquatch, and Aurora's like, fuck you, Roger. Like, they come down post-coital, and there's this battle happening. Sasquatch comes back. Aurora's like, sorry, Roger, I'm with this other dude right now. Dude turns out to be a lady. And Aurora, again, because she is both a fan of Aerosmith and sort of a homophobe
That looks like a lady.
slash
It's on
transphobe, she's
the
like, oh wait, you're a woman? No thanks. I was in love just with Walter's body because I'm horny. So
So
then
Roger gets this like sexy body that he thinks he's always desired. He finally is able to go do with his girl what he wants. He's on his own legs for the first time. And after they fuck, she immediately rejects him because her old boyfriend is back. Like,
yep.
rough story.
Very rough story. So he turns on the team. Then he has to go back to Scramble because his legs are rotting. So they need to
Well,
go back.
before that,
Okay.
when he does turn on the team, he's using a lot of hate speech too. He's calling Aurora like a whore and a tramp and a hussy. You know, like he's like full supervillain mode almost. Like it's like again, he kind of went mad, is your thought. But yeah, his legs are starting to decompose because, you know, yeah, that's not how
It turns out, so Scramble slash Lionel, he said he was redeemed. Heather believed he was redeemed. What put him into an institution to begin with is that he volunteered along with Madison to fight in the Vietnam War as Canadian nationals. He went real south when he was trying to reanimate corpses. That's what sort of plunged him into his own madness. He said he was fine. Heather's like, I'll take it at face value. You're fine. Well, it turns out that he actually reconstituted those legs from corpses. There's a reason why they're decomposing because they were already dead. The team goes back. They are like, please, Lionel. They don't know that it's made of corpses, but they're like, please, Lionel, fix Roger. He needs help again.
They put
And
Roger back in a stasis tank, basically. Like, let's
this
keep
poor
your
man
judgment
is in
perfect.
so many tanks. And then Lionel figures out that he can't. Whitman Knapp is like, wait a minute, you're experimenting on dead flesh again? And Madison is like, wait a minute, you're experimenting on dead flesh again? To pick up on Gabriella's earlier comment, full body horror just makes them into like fleshy goo monsters. Lionel himself subsumes Roger into his body to incorporate him. And then he gives him a lobotomy inside of this amalgamated body that he has made
There's like a
to.
monster made out of corpses called Omega, and Roger like dies in this monster creature as it's
Yep.
fighting the heroes.
Yeah, it's a real unfortunate ending for a character that I think was really great, really smart, an active contributor in such a different way to the team than being always someone who is nonstop action. Like he had the ability, and that's where he partnered with Madison to design the different things. In retrospect, the way that they roll this out is it's far later in the series where they look back and they're like, oh yeah, well, his psych profile going into the team was real bad, and we knew that. And it's like, what? No, that was never alluded to in when Roger was an active character, not being part of a flesh goo monster that's eventually murdered by Madison.
This feels like a Ryan Murphy, like American Horror Story, crazy plot line. Now, I want to jump through the rest of the character history quickly, and then let's take time to talk about this whole storyline, because we learn more about Roger farther in the future. By the way, there's one line in issue number 63. Roger's been dead for a while at this point, and this feels so out of character, but Madison Jeffries, while thinking of his old friend who died, in his brain calls him the Pillsbury Doughboy on wheels, and fuck that line. It makes me more mad than anything else we've said so far. I hate it so much.
Just want to point out that issue 63 is the only issue between 29 and 66 not written by Bill Mantlo. It's written by future scribe of the series, James D. Hudnall, and I have so many thoughts on Hudnall itself. But what you said does not surprise me that Jim Hudnall actually wrote that line.
Nope, don't like it. In the modern history, and I'll cover this very quickly, we learn in a series called Infinity the Hunt, number one, the Braddock Academy, which is the British like Hogwarts for like superheroes over there. These characters, the Braddock Academy is created during that like Arcade made the island and made a bunch of kids battle themselves to the death. That's where we learn about the Braddock Academy. One of the students at this academy is a new Box. Quote, son of the famous Roger Box, scientist and engineer, Box operates an exoskeleton style construct based on his father's original design, but modified to increase his speed and strength tenfold. Roger Box Jr. suffers from the same congenital condition that robbed his father of his legs at birth. And then during the fall of Krakoa, we got a new Alpha Flight 5-part series. It's the most recent volume. And Roger Box Jr. gets brought in by the government to build new sentinels in the design of Box. So Canada has its own sentinels. You cannot imagine that Roger Box meant for this design to be used by the government in this very hateful way. Roger Box Jr. has red hair. He's quite thin. He has cybernetic prosthetics, and now he's working in this job. And Alpha Flight, this is kind of a complicated series, but he acknowledges when he sees James Hudson, it's been a while. I haven't seen you since my dad's funeral, basically. So he's controlling the Box Sentinels remotely. He's not Box himself here. We do get a one-page article about him. Roger Box Jr. is a rising star in the field of biotech research, following in the footsteps of his father, Roger Box Sr., who was a pioneer in the field of in the field in Canada, known for his work in creating robotics to aid people with disabilities. So that's what his company was about. He's creating robotics to aid people with disabilities before all of this. Despite losing both of his legs at an early age, Roger Box Sr. refused to let his disability hold him back and developed a range of disability aids and supports. I don't know why we needed that line about disability holding him back. Fuck. Anyway, he is perhaps best known for his pet project Box, a robot that could operate using a psychometric helmet. Roger Box Sr.'s exceptional work earned him a place on Canada's premier super team, Alpha Flight. Roger Box Jr. was born with the same rare congenital condition that caused his father's disability, and at a young age, he received prosthetic legs, thanks to his father's research. He developed a passion for science and robotic engineering, and under his father's guidance, he improved upon those prosthetics, sparking a love for biotech engineering and robotics that led him to follow in his father's footsteps. Roger Box Jr. is now a leading biotech engineer in Canada, known for his groundbreaking work in the field of robotics for people with disabilities. He has designed and developed a range of assistive technologies that have revolutionized the lives of people across Canada and all over the world. Additionally, he is a prominent disability rights advocate and volunteer, tirelessly working to raise awareness about the challenges faced by people with disabilities and promoting inclusivity and accessibility in all forms of society. Just like his father before him, Roger Box Jr. has joined Canada's newly reformed Alpha Flight, and there are rumors that he may be resurrecting his father's box program to help protect Canada from the ever-growing Krakoan nationalist threat. By the way, that article mentions the word disabilities like 27 times. It's crazy how many times that word is used. So anyway, he's a bossy sentinel guy now, and he has a ton of pressure to keep everything perfect, and the box sentinels end up doing some really shitty things, like imprisoning mutants into camps and killing Heather Hudson, who is in the guise of Nemesis now, and like hurting some kids. And Roger Box Jr. has a few chances to run away from it all, but he chooses to toe the government sentinel line. So we've learned a lot about Rogers Sr. through the lens of Roger Jr., meaning he had a kid the whole time, retroact. Okay, let's pause to talk about this. Are we okay for 15 more minutes? I just want to check on you both. Gabriella, let me hear your thoughts on the Scramble body horror story. You said you love body horror. Did you love this? This character goes on a journey.
I mean, I was fine with it. It was just disappointing. I feel like I keep saying that about a lot of the plots. Like the, oh, I wish I had a perfect body. I wish I could look like other people. It's very like, it's tiring. That's all you hear, you know? And so I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy it.
So there's three. Let me ask your opinion on four topics.
Okay.
His relationship with Aurora, like he gets his legs, he gets his hot body that he thought he wanted, he sleeps with her, then she dumps him.
I think, okay, it's my opinion. They were sleeping together already. But so I don't think that was like the first time. But I do see. So, like, when I was like 18, I had a really good friend who was older, who was disabled. And when she asked me, like, what I wanted with my life, I was Mormon. And so I said, oh, I just want to get married and have kids. I want to be attractive to a guy. And she said to me, well, just be aware that guys don't really like girls in wheelchairs. So you're gonna have a harder time than you think. And
Also, fuck Mormons for so many reasons, but one of the things they teach people who are have
yeah.
disabilities is like if you're a good, righteous Mormon, then like God will give you a whole body in the next life, just like they promised I'd be straight in the next life. I hate the whole
Yeah.
religion. Sorry to my Mormon listeners.
I had such a sweet spirit, you know? That's what they always said to me. No, I'm
That's
just
the thing
kidding.
Mormons say to girls that would be considered quote unquote ugly. Like, oh,
Yeah.
at least if you have a sweet spirit, then boys will still desire you. It's gross. It's really.
That's what they would always say when I'd be like, yeah, I would love to date. They'd be like, oh, could like, you know, you have such a sweet spirit. And it's like very like, oh, honey, it's very much that. But that's what I was told when I was in college was like from a very well-meaning friend who was like, yeah, don't do that. Like, because like sometimes people are shitty and it's harder to find a significant other when you're disabled because you have like the ableist society around you telling you that you're not as attractive as like XYZ person who's not disabled. And I think it's a bigger deal to disabled. I mean, like, okay, speaking just for myself, it's a bigger deal to me when I'm rejected for disability related reasons than it is for the person rejecting me. Obviously, that's true with anybody when you're like rejected, but it just really hurt to read about. Like it hurt to have the whole like, oh, but he did all that like basically for her and he thought that was the only problem, but it wasn't the only problem, obviously.
By the way,
Like
everyone, Gabriella has been very happily in love with her partner for a number of years now, right?
yeah, we had 10 years in January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to those people who said those awful things, nope.
Yeah. Well, I'm still not married, so they can still say it.
Well, reasons for that too, though, right? We'll talk more in a minute.
But
Second thing I want to get your opinion on quickly. There's an odd, am I cutting you off too quickly?
no.
Okay, there's an odd genre of horror that involves people with disabilities, and it's not written for people with disabilities. There's that old show where like the blind girl's being attacked in the dark house by the guys, and like the audience watch the play, and oh no, what's gonna happen? She can't see. There's a certain genre of horror where it's wheelchair users getting they're unable to walk or move away from the person attacking them, and they can't feel the pain happening in their lower extremities. This is a body horror story where we have a madman creating legs out of corpses. It's kind of cool in a way.
I was
Roger
into
has been
it.
driven mad too, and it's like, ooh, like, and then it ends in this giant fleshy omega monster. What are your thoughts on the horror version of this tale? Tale.
I loved it, but I am fucked up. So I thought it was really cool, and I thought it was really interesting, and I thought it was fascinating, and this is why, my mom thinks there's something wrong with me. But it's okay. It's okay to like horror. And I do think that there is probably something that I should psychoanalyze about myself, that I love body horror, and I'm disabled, and I'm a disability activist. But I don't know, I just thought it was fun. It
We
was
can fan
gross
both
and
of you, my
weird.
friend.
It was gross and weird and fun. I thought it was fun.
So my third question is, how could this story have ended differently to make it better? Because this is a great moment for Roger. He's been driven mad. There's this whole story about getting what he wants, but learning a lot about himself. If he had not died ignominiously inside of this flesh creature and had ended up back in his original body as a hero, kind of learning about himself, what are ways this could have ended that would have made it better?
If I could wish anything for him, I would wish for him to have one disabled friend. Like one friend who's like, hey, stop saying wheelchair bound. Hey, stop calling yourself a cripple. It's fine. Don't make a big deal about it. You're the one making it weird. I feel like that would be better, a better environment for him. I would love to wish upon him that. And I think it would end better if it was, I don't know, maybe not even necessarily him like turning back into a disabled person, but him understanding the value of what he was like before,
Yeah, even if he had walked away from all of this and been like, okay, look, the world of superheroes is way too much for me. Like, that was a lot. And Aurora, fuck you for the way you treated me. Like, I don't like Bill, but I'm gonna walk away and I'm gonna go back to my company and my kid and I'm gonna go live my life. Like, even if I feel like that would have been so much better, because it's a cool story without all of the internal slurs that we see. Which brings us to my final question. What are your thoughts on the addition of the idea that this guy had a kid all along? They don't reveal it for 30 years, and the kid kind of turns out to be a shitty
I
person.
hate
Roger Box
that.
Jr.
I hate it, but you know what? It's very true. It's very true. We got without like talking bad about other people, I do think there is a non-zero number of disabled people, just as any minority, where you do things that are, you could say, against the cause because stuff is not quite about you. So like there are a lot of disabled racists, there are a lot of disabled homophobes, there are a lot of disabled transphobes. There are a lot of disabled, all kinds of haters, and that disappoints
There's a lot
me.
of disabled flesh manipulating veterans with PTSD who create
Ex
corpse monsters.
That was going to be my next one. That was going to be my next one. But I think it's hard because you want to believe that having the experience of a disability, you know what? It's like Art Spiegelman said in Mouse, like suffering doesn't make you better. It just makes you suffer. So like, yeah, he did end up being a shitty person. And that's hugely disappointing because I can see and you can see the potential in him to be a better champion for people who are treated shitty by society, like him, probably, but because it's not quite him, he doesn't have the empathy to understand that, like, suffering is something that can be avoided with better choices from people in power, like him.
My
So.
least, outside of the like hate speech from other characters and his internal monologue of hate for himself, my least favorite thing about them, this whole story, is just the way Roger died very ignominiously. It feels like a really unnecessary moment for a character that has a lot of potential. And frankly, I don't know, maybe there's a version of this where he actually survived. He like walked away. Or, that's not the right way. Let me delete that out.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Sorry, I didn't mean to. He
Just
actually
kidding.
left that whole Omega nonsense and is living his life off the grid somewhere. Like, there's an easy way to bring him back. There's some really interesting pieces, right? When we realized that he was a father the whole time, that he had this robotics company, and that both he and his son are really brilliant and have the same congenital condition, but they're also like huge advocates. It's only when this fucked up government pulls them into things that they do fucked up things. There's some really interesting pieces. Daryl, had you read the story about Roger Box Jr.? Did that piece surprise you here?
I did not read the long form article that you cited. I read volume 5, of course, as it was coming out, and I really enjoyed it. I think if we want to go back to volume 1 and how Roger was sort of written out of the series, this is because editorial told Bill Mantlo he had to get rid of characters, that the cast was too large and he needed to clear house. house. So we're seeing Roger sort of step off this series right before you get the removal of Northstar, Aurora, and Shaman, and Puck. So a lot of these characters are being cycled out in the interest of slimming down the cast and having it lean and mean. And then Bill Mantlo builds it up from there with different new characters. So it's unfortunate. And I feel that Roger, when Mantlo inherited the series, was a blank enough slate that he could have done so many things with him and could have made him a compelling character to carry forward, as Byrne didn't use him a whole lot. There was a lot of leeway with how he could have written Roger. He wrote him in the way he did. We have what we have at this point, and then got him to a point where it was hard for Mantlo to reconcile using the character in any capacity anymore. He drove him crazy real quick. That comes on very quickly. All of a sudden, it's like, well, he's being absorbed by Lionel, and their amalgamated being is being murdered. And that's it.
You know, the real villain in this story is ableism always, but also fuck capitalism. This man had a thriving company and a very happy life. He's designing, he's forming contracts. I love his friendship with Madison Jeffries. I love that he's doing all these things and like living his life. And then he fucking signs his like prized possession over to the government, and it just makes everything go crazy. And then they turned it into Sentinels. It's a Tony Stark story at the end of the day. Fuck. But this character has a lot of potential, and I think he could be truly alive and well out there. And I think there's some possibilities. Maybe he comes out of the woodwork because his shit kid just designed some Sentinels for the government, and he is not happy about it. And so he comes back. He could also be a supervillain, which would also be really interesting. I like this character a lot, and I think a lot of his representation is great as long as you take all the shitty dialogue out, right? The self-hatred, I think, is not necessary at all. But he's really interesting. I'd love to hear any final thoughts from either of you as we're beginning to wrap up. And then Gabriella, I just want to ask you, how you doing in America 2025? All of us are going through it. I try to bring up queerness and transness and disabilities and everything I can on the show as much as possible as we are talking. But in my opinion, people that are most affected in this crazy world are, I mean, Black and Brown people always, trans and queer people always, and people with disabilities. We're all just being put through it right now. How you doing, my friend?
Well, I've been better. I think this is a hard time, but I heard somebody say recently that, I've always heard like the Martin Luther King quote that's like, the arc of the universe always bends towards justice. And I've always kind of had that in the back of my mind, but it doesn't really feel that way anymore,
Again,
which
fuck
is,
capitalism,
yeah,
but
fuck
fuck fascism
capitalism.
more.
Yeah, well, it's almost like they're similar, but who would say that? But I heard somebody say recently that the arc of the universe doesn't bend towards justice by itself. It takes a lot of people pulling and pushing. And I think that that's beautiful because it helps me feel a little bit less alone and less like the work that I'm doing is pointless. It's hard. It's hard for a lot of us, and I don't always have a positive thing to say. But today I am with friends talking about fun shit, so that makes it a good, couple hours. And I hope whoever is listening to this feels that it was time well spent, you know?
I love you both so dearly for so many reasons. And I mean, it's always just the best time hanging with friends. But Gabriella, specifically, your French accent is not something I knew I needed until today. So thank you for
Thank you so much.
that.
That was a bad one. I
I
did it on
loved
purpose, bad.
it.
Roger.
Roger.
That
So,
was my favorite.
as we're wrapping up, I'd love to hear any final thoughts from either of you. We're going to put this out at the end of August on the Patreon. Next month on the Patreon, we're back to just kind of regular programming. The next character you can watch for, hang on one second. I'm going to do my outro last. Let me have Daryl go first. So tell us any final thoughts. Where can people find you online? Anything you want to plug for September?
I think Roger is a very compelling character. I encourage people to read his earlier appearances most, because then it goes sideways. but I think as he originally was conceived by Byrne, just as a brilliant person who can conceptualize how to design all these fantastic things and then partners with Madison to make them a reality is fantastic. People can find me online on Blue
Pause.
Sky.
I fucked up. We're putting this out at the end of September, not August.
Right.
That's where I messed my up in my brain. Please go ahead.
A great thing that you can do is follow me on Blue Sky and Instagram at Mac on Fleetwood. And you can listen to my podcast, X Factor Files podcast, with my husband, Philip. We are actually covering Alpha Flight. Go back, start a journey with us. You can also grab my book, All About Alpha Flight. It is True North, a complete reference guide and analysis of Alpha Flight's first volume, and is available on barnesandnoble.com. And I think that, I mean, selfishly speaking, it seems like a perfect gift for Thanksgiving, both American and Canadian. Why not start giving gifts just for Thanksgiving rather than a religiously based holiday? Let's exploit everything for capitalism if it involves buying my book and my book only. Go for it, everyone. I hope that more people read it and start to really find joy in Alpha Flight. As Gabriella mentioned, it's very hard to find joy sometimes. And if comics and conversations like these are something that you dig and is a bright spot in your day or your week or your month, lean into it.
Think representation is important. As a disabled person, I was glad to see just someone who's disabled as a baseline, which is kind of sad, but it's happy because I'm glad that he exists. Roger Box. I want to just encourage people to think deeply about other people and try to empathize as best you can. These days, I know it's hard and tiring to empathize with other people because there's already a lot, maybe, with you. But I hope to whoever is listening to this that you find people who are able to lift you up instead of bringing you down, which I think is very important. I do think there is no ethical consumption under capitalism, except Daryl's book. That is the one ethical piece of, consumption that you can do. So yeah, I am on, usually I'm just on Twitch nowadays, but I'm still trying to be more active on social media. But I am the girl who sits on just about everything except Twitter, which I don't use anymore. But I'm on Blue Sky, Instagram, and Twitch,
I'm
and
just going
I
to put a
don't
big
know.
comma in there. She is the girl who sits, comma, and you can find her on Twitter and Instagram. She is not the girl who sits on everything like Twitter.
Oh, God.
Like, I am the girl who sits on everything.
I am the girl who sits on everything, but no, that's actually really funny. I did not even hear myself say that. Maybe that's a new brand and opportunity. It'll be my OnlyFans. Anyway, I love that I said that actually. I'm putting that into the universe now. Yeah, I hope everybody has a great day and thank you so much for having me. This is always so much fun.
I can't not write stories in my brain as we do these. I want to write a big story about Roger Box. Like, he's still out there. His kid is in prison. He is reclaiming all of the Box trademarks. He's developed some sort of like relationship with AI, right? Like, Madison Jeffries has gone on to like fuck Danger, like the AI from the Danger Room, and they have a baby together. That's a real thing. Madison
That's
can like
crazy.
transform his consciousness into like ships. So like there's like a buddy comedy for these two, but also it's kind of a villain story, but it's the kind of villains where they're not really villains. They're just not playing by the rules of society any longer. I think there's an amazing Roger Box story out there where he's just reclaiming his legacy. All right. You can follow the show, Gray Malkin underscore Lane on Instagram most easily. We are closing out the month of September with a what if story. What if Storm had remained a thief? We've been doing lots of Marvel magic stuff, and then we're jumping into horror stuff in October on the show. The
Yes.
next Patreon coming out immediately after this. I can't believe I get to unite the real life friends, Trung Li Nien and Alyssa Wong. We're going to be talking all about Karma's evil sister, Susan Hatchie. So watch for that next time. Thank you, everybody. And thank you mostly just Daryl and Gabrielle for this delightful time this morning. It's so great to laugh with you. We'll see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Show. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. In the early years of World War II, thousands of Jewish families across Germany and Austria received official notices informing them that elderly relatives, war veterans, and prominent community members were being relocated to a special town where they would be cared for in safety. The place was called Theresienstadt, a quiet old fortress city and occupied
occupied Czechoslovakia, one of many such places, but we're focusing just on this one today. Authorities described it as a self-governing Jewish settlement where residents could live together, work, attend concerts, and grow old in peace away from the violence of the war. Some families were even told that their loved ones would be spared harsher deportations because of age or service to Germany in the First World War. Many believed it was a rare mercy. Behind the reassuring language was a carefully engineered deception overrun by the Nazi deportation system run by Adolf Eichmann under the broader SS leadership of Reinhard Heydrich. Theresienstadt was never meant to be a refuge. It was transformed into a sealed ghetto controlled by the SS, later commanded by officials such as Karl Rahm. People were packed into barracks and former homes far beyond capacity, given starvation rations, and forced into labor. Disease spread rapidly, while the Nazis allowed limited cultural activity, music, theater, and art. At the same time, Theresienstadt functioned as a transit point, sending tens of thousands onward to extermination camps, especially Auschwitz. The lie reached its peak in 1944 when international concern over the fate of Europe's Jews forced the Nazis to permit a visit by the International Red Cross. In advance, thousands of prisoners were deported to reduce overcrowding. Streets were cleaned, flower boxes were installed, fake cafes opened, and children were coached on what to say, so that when the inspectors were brought through, they were shown a carefully choreographed version of daily life, complete with concerts and well-dressed residents strolling through town. Soon after, the Nazis produced a propaganda film portraying Theresienstadt as a thriving Jewish community meant to counter growing reports of mass murder. In reality, about 140,000 Jews passed through Theresienstadt. Roughly 30,000 died there from hunger and disease, and over 88,000 were deported east, likely never returning. Today, Theresienstadt is remembered not just as a place of suffering, but as one of the Holocaust's most sophisticated acts of fraud, a ghetto designed to make persecution look humane. It now stands as a stark example of how systems of oppression often begin not with open brutality, but with official promises of safety, orderly relocation, and protection before revealing their true purpose. Today we're going to cover the final issue of the Red Skull Incarnate series from 2011. This is issue 5. It is a beautiful and jarring story all the way through. One final image on the cover of the Red Skull looming evilly over a row of tanks that are advancing on a city. In the book, it's June 29th, 1934 in Munich. Johann and a drunk commander discuss Ernst Röhm, who is a homosexual in real life, being a degenerate, and Hitler's slowly turning on all of his allies. We are right in history before the Night of the Long Knives here. They reference the von Papen speech, comment on Röhm's neuralgia. Then Johann kills his commander with a blade to the chest. That's the little Red Skull shit that's growing up here. Later in Bad VC, Johann, dressed like a bellhop, is planning to murder Hitler and Röhm, but the SS gets there. They arrest men like Edmund Heinz, and then they kill Röhm. Johann finds himself turning on his ally and killing him in the bellhop uniform. This is Dieter, the kid that's been in the story right from the beginning. And Hitler sees it. This impresses Hitler. Instead of killing Johann, he's now going to turn him into his greatest weapon, referencing those earlier stories where Red Skull as a bellhop is discovered by Hitler. So suddenly, Johann is at the right hand of Hitler. And we get this closing narration. During the Night of the Long Knives, Hitler authorized the murder of scores of his rivals, establishing his total authority and the end of the rule of law in Nazi Germany. Thousands of ordinary Germans opposed Hitler's dictatorship and genocide. They paid with their lives, but thousands more followed him in the end. They paid with their souls. So the message of this series is not lost in the narration. Let me welcome my buddy Ryan Iorio to talk about this crazy Red Skull story with me. Hello, Ryan. My first question for you is, are you a Red Skull fan, my friend?
My knowledge of comics is primarily just like X-Men and of like the teams that the X-Men surround around. I do know a little bit about the Avengers. I would say very little about the Red Skull. So I kind of really actually enjoyed this series, though, because it gave me kind of like a knowledge into before he was who he was.
And if you have never read Magneto Testament, it's the prequel for this series. It's by the same writer and kind of the same time period staple showing the upbringing of Magneto. It's beautiful. If you've never read it, it's incredible.
I think that might be what I will be doing after this while I'm waiting for laundry to dry. I really enjoyed it. I thought that I love kind of the finding out how a villain becomes a villain and how somehow they kind of not make you like him, but kind of understand, not even understand, but like you get to know a little bit more about him. So I kind of really like that you get to learn more. It reminded me of kind of like, for lack of a better comparison, the Joker almost, you know, like finding out how the villain becomes who they are. And I just really like how it also flows with the time, like real stuff that happened in history and stuff like that. So I enjoyed it. I was expecting maybe like a not a happier ending, but a nicer ending, but this was amazing.
Yeah, this series, it's interesting. If you read Magneto Testament, it's, you know, here's this madman at the end of the day. Magneto is kind of a madman who gets created because of these oppressive circumstances. It's this awful war and the loss that he suffered. But Red Skull, the story almost seems to be the opposite. Here's this really shitty kid who likes stabbing puppies. And because of this regime, look what he's allowed to become. There's no accountability. If you put this man in charge, then that's the worst case scenario. And it's interesting watching the parallels too, because at this point in Hitler's own story, he rose to power through gathering voices that were desperate for some sort of recognition. You know, the modern equivalency now would be white supremacy being used to fuel certain campaigns. But he surrounded himself with all these crazies. And then this was the point where he had to make a deal with the military to kill all of his closest allies in order to solidify his power. And that's what we do. We see him turning on his homosexual, like, right-hand man. And Red Skull is turning on his friend at the same time, right? This, like, seizure of power and the parallel of it. It's pretty smartly written, I think.
It is. It is. Now, through did you see, were you expecting the turn at the end?
I don't know if expecting. So I read this back at the beginning when it first came out. And I remember being very uncomfortable by it. But reading it in this era of American politics, it hits a little differently. Do you know? Like
I completely understand what you
it's
said.
gross. So I read it very differently in 2011, I think. Do you see any parallels into your X-Men stories here?
I mean, you honestly really like struck my curiosity about the Magneto story of this too. So I could see definitely parallels there, but from what you're saying, it sounds like kind of maybe there was a happier ending to the Magneto story or something, but I don't know. But
No, I don't know if it's happier.
All
It's
right,
what
well then,
his
yeah.
focus is on the events in the concentration camp, so it's a little bit of a rougher read, but it's a really beautifully and delicately done. Highly recommended. But also, one of the few episodes of my show when I reviewed this series, I cried, which is not something I do often, at least when recording, very frequently. Now, in the X-Men, though, we have the modern parallels of the X-Men are the Jewish characters or the oppressed population, the homosexuals, the communists that were being persecuted against, right? And so I think that's where the parallel opens quite prominently. I talked about the settling of the city of Theresienstadt at the earlier part of the show, and how many X-Men stories have we seen that fall directly into that? If you look at the animated series, do you remember the early Genosha episodes where they're like inviting mutants to come live in this beautiful homeland and then they literally enslave them there? And we see that parallel in X-Men comics quite often. It's not an uncommon story. What happens when you put this man in power? That's the direct result. And it's kind of a parallel to what we're watching happening today.
You're 100% right. I mean, I've known that, but I didn't even think about it kind of like reading this comic itself. But then when you bring it up right now, it's like, why didn't I think of this? You're absolutely right. So yeah, no, it's very, very true. I mean, how many times, like you said, not even just in the animated series, but the comics alone too. How many Geonosis have there been? How many Krakoa, you know, all those things where it, or Krakoa was amazing, but you know, there were other islands and other things that didn't go
But
so well.
part of the X-Men mythology has always been the idea of homeland. It's always been that from the very beginning. Found family is the key connector for a lot of us, you know? Which brings me to my final question. How are you doing in 2026, my friend? We're recording this, everyone, in mid-January, the day after the murder of the second, probably more than two, but the second victim in Minneapolis. It's widely being discussed. It's another murder caught on videotape. And who knows what's happened between now and when this comes out. But Ryan, how you holding up these days, my friend?
I'm okay. It's one of those things where you have to take it day by day and try and find the, if you, I know we can't find the good in the news right now, but then just try and find the good in your life alone. Emulate on that. But I don't know, even just before recording, me and my husband were watching the news, and it had a whole thing about the ICU or the nurse that was shot, and it was just it broke my heart. And earlier today, I was talking with with Kevin and Sean from Solving for X, and so it's just hard to not be depressed and not hate what's going on right now. Or you can feel that way and all that stuff. And I don't know, like I try and tell my co-host, we just got to try and find the good around us for right now and
And I
focus
think
on that.
I live largely in a world of two things can be true, right? I can be very devastated and still creating joy and love in the world around me at the same time. I think reducing our joy, reducing our light, not as a way to avoid what's happening, but as a way to create and cultivate safety and community, I think they're absolutely crucial. It's kind of the only way to get by and be okay as it's going on around us. But Ryan Pretty and the others who are affected by this horrible tragedy, it's absolutely heartbreaking. And then I immediately think of, here's a white guy that got killed, but here's all these other people nobody's talking about. Because it's, you know what I mean? Like it's those thoughts get pretty dark pretty quickly. But God, do we love to read about Mr. Sinister?
So true, so
Reality
true.
and fiction and the way they line up. Do you have any final thoughts today, my friend?
Just thanks for bringing this title to my attention. And also sending me home with a little bit of homework as well too. So thanks. I really enjoyed this. I just enjoyed learning a little bit more about the sick little shit that the Red Skull was before he had that red skull. No, I'm
Magneto
kidding.
kicks his ass a couple times if you look for it in the comics. So well deserved, well deserved. All right, my friend, great to see you. Thanks everybody for listening. Take care of yourselves. Living joyfully remains an act of defiance in this crazy world. We'll see you all back here next week on Grey Malkin Lane.